What does it say about human nature that you can be watching your favorite sports team totally bombing, you're feeling dejected, you question the money you spent on the ticket, and then suddenly you're lifted along with the rest of the crowd, and all the pain fades for a moment when you see the t-shirt cannon? Sam Summers and John Wertheim can tell you what it says. They do in their new book, in the appropriately titled chapter, Why the T-Shirt Cannon Has Something to Teach Us About Human Nature. Now, that book is called This Is Your Brain on Sports. Sam Summers is an experimental social psychologist. Welcome to the program, Sam.
Oh, it's good to be here. Thanks for having us.
And John Wertheim is executive editor of Sports Illustrated. John, welcome back.
Thanks, Audie. Good to be here.
So I want to talk about those T-shirt cannons. What's the deal? What's the science part of this about why we're obsessed with them?
Well, number one, it's free. But perhaps more importantly, they're scarce. And all of a sudden, you're at the arena and you see it coming toward you, and there's only a handful of them. And you have to box out the grandma on your right and the 11-year-old on your left, and you snag one. And boy, that's a feeling of accomplishment. And this T-shirt that might be three sizes too big that you never would have spent a dollar for otherwise, now you're going to mount it on your wall like it's a trophy at home. And so it's this.
But does it make a difference if you didn't pay that much for the tickets? Like, if you go to a game and, you know, you went in at the last minute and the team's crummy and you can get the tickets like for nothing, do you really care about the stupid T-shirt?
This is John. There's a lot of research that says, you know, the difference between a penny and free is irrationally large. And we will do great things. You know, we'll stand in line for samples and we'll get credit cards with high interest rates. We do irrational things when free is in the equation.
I want to wade into another issue brought up, which is the idea of the good-looking quarterback. I thought this was more propaganda from high school. You guys actually tried to tackle it. How did you even start with the research for figuring this out?
This is John. This is one of the great sports archetypes, right? The good-looking quarterback. And you're right. I mean, it's Tom Brady. It's the attractive NFL quarterback. But it starts in high school, really. And we wanted to say, first of all, is there truth behind this? And we devised a study, which was essentially a blind taste test. We had non-football fans look at photos, sort of yearbook style, of quarterbacks and then of other positions. And what we found was that quarterbacks are not, in fact, in this blind taste test, they are not, in fact, considered better looking than players at other positions.
You're calling it a taste test, but basically you put these photos in front of them and you said, do you think that guy's good looking?
Yeah, that's right. This is Sam. It's exactly what we did. It was a scientific study, but we basically went back to junior high school for this. We said, here are a bunch of pictures. On a scale of 1 to 10, how hot is this guy? And per John's
for
comment,
science.
Right, oh, all in the name of science. And what we find, as John suggested, the quarterbacks don't come out near the top of the list, but everyone assumes that they will. And it speaks more generally to the way we see political candidates, job candidates, CEOs, that there's something, again, about our perceptual process that conflates different traits. In this case, things like attractiveness and leadership, and you really can't find a position in sports today that has more of an impact on the game's outcome than a quarterback. We put all that together and we think, yep, they're handsome.
I'm going to dare wade into a heated debate, which is the issue of youth sports trophies. And to bring people up to speed, essentially there's the camp of people who think it's okay if everyone gets a trophy. And then there are the people who basically say only winners get trophies. You guys have a different take inspired by a Notre Dame hockey team from the 80s. Tell us about it.
As two dads who coach youth sports ourselves, the participation trophy era doesn't sit well with us in some regards. But this Notre Dame hockey study tells us here you have a collegiate hockey team a couple of decades ago that was struggling. They approached their psychology professors for help. And what the professors came up with was a system of praise, but very targeted praise towards specific incentives. So a certain number of hits by a certain number of players over a period of time, and they charted these in the locker room, and that this kind of targeted praise towards effort in particular was something that led the team to perform better. And so our argument would be praise of our kids, certainly not bad, but if we're going to praise them for hustle, praise them for effort. When Coach Sam's got a softball team out there, and both John and I coach our daughters in softball, the end of the season awards aren't just MVP or, you know, hey, way to go, atta girl, you were great. It's best job hustling over to back up third base on a throw from the outfield.
On a trophy?
You got to use a small font and big margin.
Absolutely,
a little stenciling. So it's about praising effort. When your kid comes home and you say, oh, you're such a great artist, you're so smart, that's great for now. But when they get to the point where they struggle with the math test, where they struggle with the art project, they start to think, I guess I'm not smart, I'm not a great artist. And praising effort and that attempt to get there in the process itself is really important.
We often get letters when we air just about any segment on sports. Frankly, that's along the lines of, like, I listen to NPR for the news. Why are you doing this thing on sports? What do you think makes sports a subject really worth digging into in this way?
Well, this is Sam. I'm going to give you the psychology professor answer. I mean, I do this in my classes all the time, wherever you want to talk about factions of people who are in conflict and the pleasure they take in each other's suffering, the schadenfreude you take when things don't go your rival's way. Well, hey, sports provides a tremendous example. It's this basic core human psychology on display for us. It's humanity writ large. And so, you know, I would argue we can use sports to understand people, but also the election, job hiring, you name it.
And John, of course, you're biased, but I think I want your answer on this too.
I'll give you the sports journalist perspective, which, yes, sports have these tremendous explanatory powers, but also sports have become this monstrous cultural force. Sports are not this sort of isolated island, this diversion that we tune into on Saturday afternoons. I mean, sports are this huge, you know, multi-billion dollar business that really have this tremendous bearing on the culture right now.
John Wertheim is executive editor of Sports Illustrated. Sam Summers, social psychologist, professor at Tufts. Their new book is This Is Your Brain on Sports. Gentlemen, thanks so much.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thanks a lot.